The title of the lesson is, There is No Virtual Life, Just Life. And what I want to do today is talk about the perils of the virtual world. It's kind of interesting. It's a thing and a place that we interact with quite often. I think probably we could say the majority of us in the room have some interaction, probably even daily, with the virtual world. But I want to make sure we understand it. I want to make sure we have a good grasp on what's out there and the things that we put ourselves at risk. The virtual world is a name given to electronic media, the internet, and the world that exists therein. The internet, basically, if you don't understand it, here's a brief overview. It's a massive global connection of public and privately owned computers networked together for the purpose of data storage and exchange, in other words, communication. And basically, the internet is owned by everybody and it's owned by nobody, all at the same time. So it can be very difficult to really grasp who's in charge. Well, nobody's in charge. This guy's in charge, that guy's in charge. Everybody gets to run their own little piece because it's this huge network. It connects people virtually all over the planet, even at times in outer space. People in the space station, the space shuttle, have had links back to Earth where they were interacting with people via the internet, who are anything but physically connected. In other words, it's not dependent upon your geographical location. And they can be virtually connected across hundreds and even thousands of miles. And that idea of a virtual connection, that's why we call it the virtual world. It's a system that allows the seemingly anonymous exchange of all kinds of information between billions of people at the stroke of a key. And notice I say seemingly anonymous. In some ways, the virtual world is quite a parallel to the real world. But in others, it's quite divergent and jaded. It's very different in some respects. The goal of this lesson is to help us all differentiate between the two, the real versus the virtual world, and to help us better understand the impact of one upon the other. And they are not mutually exclusive from one another, not by any stretch. The latter half of James chapter 1, verse 27 tells us that part of pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is to keep oneself unspotted from the world. That's what I really want us to hone in on. That's the central kernel of the message today, is that's our goal, to keep ourselves unspotted from the world, regardless of what world that might be. Today we must understand that this means that in the spiritual world, physical world, virtual world, and any other world that man might invent, we must strive to remain unspotted. And that's a task in and of itself. Well, let us better understand the virtual world. How many people are connected to the virtual world or the internet? Basically, from the best I can understand, best I can figure out, there's about 2.7 billion people of the 7.2 billion people that exist globally that have internet access. It's a large group of people. And that was back from 2014. 77% of people in developed countries have access to the internet and to this virtual world. About 93% of young adults, that's 18 to 29, regularly use the internet. Not shockingly, 93% of teens regularly use the internet. So how do people interact with the virtual world? There are many methods. Web surfing for information, that's probably what most of us commonly do. Business or commerce, we go in and we buy things, we sell things. Blogs, go out there and either read others' opinions or state our own. Chat rooms, discussions, virtual discussions with other people. Streaming media, audio, videos, and movies. This is kind of what we used to use cable TV for, but now we do a lot of that with the internet. Social networking, that's a big one. It's on the move today. Internet gaming, dating sites and services. These are just a few of the ways. There are a lot more, but we're not going to try to name them all. Self-presentation, there are different ways of presenting yourself in this virtual world. Basically, three different philosophical options. Some people present themselves as themselves with an honest representation of who they are. They're truthful. They really say, this is what I look like. They post real pictures of themselves, and they don't lie. And then others present themselves as an alter ego. They make up a persona that exists online in this virtual world. And then some is a blend of some truth and some embellishment. So they kind of make a better version. It's almost who they are, but they represent themselves better than who they really are. Many devices, personal computers, public computers, and mobile devices. It may not shock you to find out that 50% of teens, 45% of young adults are mobile-only users in order to access the internet. So in other words, that thing that rides around on your hip, in your pocket, in your purse, that is increasingly becoming a continual attachment to this virtual world. We're not linked to a desk anymore. We're not linked to some place that has a hard connection. We're working on Wi-Fi and wireless connections that keep us always connected with the internet. Well, there are some pros about this connectivity. There are some good things. There's massive amounts of information available. Quick and easy information exchange. This sermon, after we're done preaching, after anybody's done, we save it and we send it to the website, we email it to those that have asked for it, and they've got it just like that because of the internet. That's certainly a pro. Work and productivity. We can get more done faster. The chance for mankind, for whatever it's worth, to compile and share what we've learned, our collective knowledge, and put it all in one place for all to access. Access to helpful information for positive growth. In other words, things like Bible and spiritual studies, secular studies. You can go online and learn how to cook. You can go online and learn how to be an electrician, an engineer, many things. Self-improvement. But there are certainly some cons. There are certainly some abuses. We could say some of them are the same. Well, there's a massive amount of information available out there. And that is as much a con as it is a pro. But there are bad influences that are promoted, and harmful ideas that are promoted as though they're acceptable on the internet. It's one of the big drawbacks, that the internet has no conscience. These ideas are put out there, and frankly, most of the time, it's just a one-on-one experience, and the viewer is by himself against the internet to see if he agrees or disagrees. Cyberbullying, it's an interesting, terrible method that the internet has been employed for to abuse people. Cyber manipulation, slander, makes it easier to say bad things about people. Libel makes it easier to write bad things about people. Extortion, the things that we write and say and post and use against us. Theft. It also opens up a real easy avenue for duplicity, double-mindedness, and there's a couple words I made up here, two-facedness, and backstabbery. Makes it really easy to do those things. Surprising how easy it is to do that on the internet, things we might not do in front of other people. So it provides a dangerous access to a dual lifestyle. And that's what I really wanted to look at today, that dangerous access to a dual lifestyle. The biggest problem with the virtual world is that there is a whole paradigm or culture that has developed in our world, in our society, that believes you can say, do, post, read, and view anything you want to on the internet without any responsibility, without any culpability, or without any consequence whatsoever. Many people behave in the virtual world as if they are in an alternate universe where the rules don't apply, where you can do whatever you want and no one will ever know, no one will ever hold you accountable. And there's become a logical disconnect, and this is the real problem, a logical disconnect between the actions that people engage in the virtual world and the effects on themselves and other people in the real world. We don't add it up anymore. This perceived freedom and absence of consequence can erode a person's sense of reality. Well, obviously what we're here to talk about as well is the reality of the virtual world. Now, that's intentionally meant to sound like a contradiction in terms, but we want to talk about the reality of this virtual world. There are many, many dangers in the virtual world that become real in the real world. There is a real magnification and glorification of bad choices online. The internet is notorious for this, that you can put whatever you want out there and all of a sudden it seems to be what everybody's doing. God says in Proverbs 25:11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Wow, that's eloquent. That's beautiful. That really says something about God's opinion about saying the right thing, a wholesome word at the right time. He also says in Proverbs 12:16 that a fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. This is God's opinion about what our speech should be. It should be things that are helpful, that are said at the right time for the right reasons to be helpful, not to voice our anger. But unfortunately, God's magnification of good words and warnings about foolish speaking are just basically lost on the World Wide Web. And yes, I wrote the World Wide Web. Hasty, ill-conceived, or hateful words are immortalized forever on the internet. Like we said initially, no one owns the internet. No one is in charge of it. No one person can control it. But when we post something out there, it's out there for good. Saying terrible things about friends and family is amplified. I say it one time in a moment of anger, and it's repeated, and it's repeated, and it's saved, and it's on everybody's screen. Saying terrible things about famous people. Now, this is a little bit different, isn't it? Well, maybe I don't want to say things about my family, but isn't that what famous people and the government officials are for? Aren't we supposed to say bad things about them? But those things that we say and that we post online are amplified. Saying harmful things about yourself. Those things are amplified. The things that you say out there, everybody can see, and they are forever saved on the internet. These comments are out there never to be taken back. Compromising situations gone viral, forever included in the public record. Now, we've all done things that we're not proud of. And perhaps we've done things we weren't proud of where cameras were present. But the internet adds a whole other dimension to that. That the posting of defaming or non-flattering pictures is something that happens all over the place. I actually had an employee that came close to losing his job, not because he was doing something that was morally wrong. He's using a piece of equipment incorrectly. Somebody took a picture, somebody sent it out to about 100 of their users. Before you know it, it's back to Miller Electric and our insurance company. And this employee's in hot water over something that any of us could have done because of the power of the internet. Because those pictures travel so quickly. We are no longer in a little bubble by ourselves, but we live our lives globally when we participate in things online. 1 in 10 adolescents or teens have had embarrassing or damaging pictures taken of themselves without their permission, often using cell phone cameras, and it should say also, and posted to the internet. Nude pictures. It's been a huge problem. We've seen that in government. If you work in any kind of a corporation, we've even experienced scenarios. Somebody sent things out. But nude pictures are a huge problem. About 1 in 5 teens have posted or sent sexually suggestive or nude pictures of themselves to others. That's in America. That's kind of shocking. That's 20%. And most of those people said, well, I took this picture for one individual and I sent it to them. And I never meant for it to go any bigger than that. But we don't have control of the internet, do we? When we do something like that, it's out there. Not to mention, you know, that people can grab it while it's going from point A to point B and they can use it for their own purposes. When those relationships dissolve, a lot of times those people send those pictures out to other people. And next thing you know, it's everywhere. It's on the World Wide Web, and there's nothing you can do to get it back. There's actually an industry now called revenge porn. And it's the idea of that when you get angry at your significant other, that you post these sensitive videos or pictures that they have sent to you with the intent of defaming them, with the intent of getting them back, with the intent of showing them that you're going to have the upper hand. Huge industry, multi-million-dollar already industry. And obviously done without consent. But because of the complexity and the diversity of the internet, it's almost impossible to stop these attacks. Because somebody downloads it from the guy that sent it, and now he's got it, and thousands, if not millions, of personal computers have that information. And so once you're out there, you're out there. The allure of elevation to famous status for egregious sinful acts. You know, there's a lot of people that want to be famous in this world today, in our country, in this world. And the internet is a great way. If fame is all that matters to you, it's a great way to become famous, if that's what speaks to you. But unfortunately, that's given rise to things like school shootings. And people understand that when I do this, everybody will see me everywhere. It will be on the news. It will be on the internet. I will be famous. And that's something that really didn't exist before we had this level of connection electronically with each other. Murders, same thing. People do things. They hurt other people because they know it will be captured and immortalized on the web. Rape, and you can keep on naming crime after crime. These things that God calls despicable are held up as ways that I can become famous online. Virtual world, real manipulation. Again, people think they can go there and be safe. Nobody knows who I am. Nobody can get to me. But it's not that safe. A false reality can really lead you in a false direction. In general, people have a tendency to control the way that they post about themselves. The public perception that others have about them by posting favorable items for their about their life more so than unfavorable. But what that means is when we use social networking, what we look and see other people doing is not everything that they're doing. They don't always post the bad stuff with the good. They don't always post an entire picture of who they are. So this false reality that we see in social networking can tend to lead us in the wrong direction. We say everybody else's life is better than mine. Everybody else is doing this and I'm not doing that. And there's actually research that shows that people that consistently use social networking can wind up becoming more depressed than those that don't, because they look out there and they see, well, everybody else's life is great and mine's not. So we have to understand that has a real life effect on us when we are disconnected with one another. And there is a subtle, even unconscious manipulation through only showing one's good qualities. And what I mean by that is it's not that people are necessarily trying to manipulate you. It's just that they're not going to post things that make them look bad. Smart people, at least, right? They're gonna only show you the good times you're having, and we can really get off course thinking that everybody has more money, more stuff, a better life. And it just becomes this avenue that accentuates our natural tendency to envy one another. That's not a good use of the internet. It's a harmful thing that it does to us. Dating sites, dating services. Research shows that people have the highest likelihood to lie on dating sites out of all other social media venues. And I just say that not to say that they're the worst thing in the world, don't use them, but you need to understand if you use dating sites, you're looking for somebody on a dating site, you have to understand that you very likely may not be getting an accurate picture of that person. You may not really be getting a good understanding of who it is that's on the other side, because they're marketing themselves. They're trying to sell themselves. And they want you to see what they want you to see. You may be intentionally manipulated by someone controlling your perception of who they are. It may be their goal, maybe their intention to deceive you. Cyber theft. This is probably the one we hear the most about. Identity theft. People breaking into your little portion of the virtual world, stealing your identity, stealing your money, taking your retirement fund. But it's certainly not the only way. It's just the one that seems to make the news the most. Cyber extortion. Cyber extortion and the posting of nude pictures go hand in hand. That once you put pictures of yourself out there to somebody, now they have an inroad to extort something else from you. And it's often used that people are contacted because somebody found a picture and said, I found this of you online. If you don't do X, Y, or Z, then I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to use this to force you to do more of the same or to do something else. And it becomes a quid pro quo type thing. Cyberbullying. According to the U.S. legal definition, cyberbullying could be limited to posting rumors or gossips about a person on the internet, bringing about hatred in others' minds, or it may go to the extent of personally identifying victims and publishing materials severely defaming and humiliating them. This is something that's new, something that the internet has brought us. You know, before bullying happened in different places and different venues, now is a simple, easy way for us to get to people that we want to hurt. It's not limited to schools, back hallways, and alleys. It's not even limited to kids anymore, thanks to the access that the internet provides to us. And it can vary from just a drive-by slam, you know, somebody just says something in passing that's harmful or hurtful, to concentrated effort to malign. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's groups of people that ally themselves against an individual to bully them, just to be terrible and mean and hurt them. Outside of the school setting, this is borne out in statistics. Outside of the school setting, the internet is the leading venue for children to be bullied. That means it's not happening as much at your house. It's not happening as much in your neighborhood. It's not happening. The only place that beats the internet is school itself. The internet is number two place for children to be bullied. And at least at school, there are some adults around, right? Not so on the internet. 45% of kids active on the internet are cyberbullied, with 1 in 4 experiencing repeat occurrences. There have been about 6 cases in the last 10 years of cyberbullying that has ended in suicide, that really have made it to the national level of media or even to the global level of media coverage. Now, there are plenty more, but these are the ones that really got the most coverage. 3 of those that were perpetrated were done so using nude pictures of that victim that they had sent to an individual voluntarily. So these, just make sure you're understanding what I'm saying. In these 3 cases, and these 3 were all 3 girls, they ended up killing themselves after being cyberbullied And it is initiated by the fact that they sent somebody a nude picture and it wound up going somewhere they didn't intend for it to happen. Because they didn't understand the internet. They didn't understand the virtual world. Four of those would fall into the slightly broader category of compromising pictures. In other words, there's one additional that wasn't a nude picture, but it was nonetheless compromising, sent to somebody else, and it got out of hand and went somewhere they didn't want it to go. And that was actually a male involved in that one. Teenage girls are statistically more susceptible to cyber manipulation involving pictures, but boys and adults are close behind them. And it's not one of those things that among adults and among boys, it's not a big gap between the genders. Everybody is susceptible to this when they post these things out there of themselves, these pictures. Virtual world has real temptation and real opportunities to sin. There's real monetary gain through cyber shenanigans. So if you're in the business of making money at whatever cost, you can certainly do that online. If you don't mind deceiving and defrauding other people to take their money, the internet is the best place to do that. And that is a huge temptation if money speaks to you. That if I can just adjust the truth a little bit and make this sale, these people will never know the difference because they don't know me, because they don't know where I am, because I'm hidden from them. Real social and influential power through speaking your mind and being aggressive online. In other words, some people are sucked in by the allure of followers and likes enough that they are tempted to say things they shouldn't. Maybe that sounds like an oversimplification, but that the power of the number of people out there that are seeing what you're saying, the power of the number of people out there that may enjoy what you're saying and may agree with it, is frankly enough for some of us to be tempted to go farther than we know we should go, to say things that we know that are not right or that God would be disappointed with us saying online. Because we're going to get a rise out of our followers. Because we're going to get a good reaction. Pornography. Pornography is prevalent online. Some studies show that 33% to 59% of young adults participated in some type of pornographic production. Now, that doesn't mean that they were in a studio somewhere. They don't work for one of those kinds of groups. But this encompasses those that have taken pictures of themselves, videos of themselves, and the other group as well that are more in production studios. But as much as 59% of young adults have participated in the production of pornography that's posted online. That's shocking. That's astonishing. And it all speaks to the draw, that there's quick money, that there's quick fame, that there's this allure that the internet uniquely provides. Viewing. About 66% of young adult men and about 18% of women report on their own that they use porn at least once every week, brought to you by the ease of access found on the internet. Something that's completely against everything that God wants us to do and be is so available right there online. As you can see, it's not limited to males. Don't let this statistic throw you the wrong direction. But statistically speaking, men are 543% more likely to look at porn than females. And that does not mean that women aren't looking. That just talks about how much more men are doing. So we need to understand this is something that is a particular weakness of men. When you have that phone on your hip, you have an outlet that takes you to this weakness right here like it's never done before in mankind's history. And we need to understand that. We need to be aware of it. Because that phone goes everywhere with you. It's easy to conceal, it's easy to hide, it's easy to be alone by yourself with it, and you need to understand the danger that's with you. Men are statistically more likely to pay for sex and cheat on their spouses who look at pornography, basically. The statistics bear out that men that look at pornography are more likely to do these things. 66% of college-age men and 50%, this is perception, I want you to understand this. 66% of college-age men and 50% of college-age women say that viewing pornography is an acceptable way to express oneself sexually. And where did they get that idea? Did they get that from the parents? Did they get that from the adults in our world? Or did they get that from the unsupervised internet? from the internet that is completely without conscience. How did they come to believe that this is an acceptable practice? Well, the internet makes it just that easy to be indoctrinated to the things that it believes because it has no conscience. It has no soul. The internet makes it easy for us to accept sinful behavior as normal behavior because it presents itself as a mob. The mob mentality exists online. And when I see the mob online, I say, well, this must be what everybody's doing. I need to join in. I need to just trust in the volume and the persistence of human opinions that are out there on the virtual world. And trust in that even over the purity and the unchanged nature of God's Word. You see, how many of us have our phone with us all the time? And I know you could probably say, well, if I have my phone, I have God's Word with us. But how many of us have God's Word with us all the time? And what I want us to see is that the internet is this ever-present influence. Every time you go to search for something, how many pop-ups come up that are things that you don't want to see, things that you're not interested in, but yet there it is calling to your attention. How many search results come up when you look for something else that you don't want to look at? It's always with us, and we have a tendency to trust in it because in our minds it represents the majority. The virtual world is today, and God is so yesterday and antiquated and irrelevant. That's what the internet tells us, that the internet is the source of real information, and that those things that are in that old book, that old dusty old book, are outdated, and they're not worth listening to. And that's what the internet as a whole tends to present to us. The internet is making its own standard for what's right and what's wrong, if anything indeed is wrong. There is perceived anonymity. In other words, there is this perception that when I'm online that no one will know. And the virtual world is truly unique in that quality, in the volume of anonymous sins that are available. Because like I said, it is with us everywhere. It's always present. And it opens up a whole world of things that we can do all by ourselves that are completely sinful, like nothing else can. And think about this. Ask yourself if you believe this statement here. Anonymity makes almost every sin, maybe I could have said every sin, easier to imagine committing. No one will ever know, so no one's ever going to tell me that I've done wrong. That's the message that the internet sends us. Anonymity makes every sin harder to stop. It's what we would call secret sin. And the internet is full of opportunity to sin secretly. And we have to understand that about it. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 10. From the mouth of Solomon, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Who's your companion when you're on the internet? Who is it that's going to lift you up when you go astray online? Well, it's pretty well left to you. You're by yourself. Unless you have some kind of structure that you've put in place where somebody's always with you, you can go ahead and raise your hand if that's how you surf the internet. You always have a guardian there with you. But we are by ourselves. We're in what the Bible describes as the most vulnerable situation we'll ever be in. Me in temptation and no one else. No one to help me up when I fall. And that is something that is uniquely available on the internet more so than any other avenue. Luke 18, verse 17 tells us that nothing is secret that will not be revealed, nor anything hidden that will not be known or come to light. But does the internet remind us of that? The internet, the virtual world, reminds us that we're by ourselves, that this is my secret place, this is where I can make an opportunity for myself to do these things, and no one will know about it. And that's one of the worst dangers that it can present to us. Real temptations and sin. That is 1 John. Let me get my hard notes out here. First John chapter 2. 15 through 17. It says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, The love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. The virtual world offers all of these real sins that the real world offers. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It gives us opportunity to do all these sins virtually, and yet with this disconnect in our mind that says there will be no consequences for this. But you see, that's not the truth. The truth of the matter is that every sin in the virtual world carries with it full and real consequences in our life and with God. The virtual world is an enormous and real responsibility in the real world. So we may call it virtual, but the responsibility is real, and the consequences are real. The virtual world has become ubiquitous. In other words, it is everywhere. How many times have you been somewhere with your kid? You knew that they had their little device with them of some sort that doesn't have an internet connection, but it can grab hold of Wi-Fi. And all of a sudden you look over and they've got connection. How'd you get that? Well, there's Wi-Fi here. It doesn't matter if you're going to McDonald's, if you're going to somebody's house, if you're in the church building. There is internet connection almost everywhere we go. And that's growing, and this problem is only going to get worse. It's only going to be more available. And there are real people trying to take real advantage of real people, and they may have 24-hour access to you and your loved ones everywhere you go. Think about that. Do you want to continue to open your home up to this type of influence? Now, I get a picture of a gun there, right? Would you leave a gun and bullets laying around in your home? Well, why not? You understand the potential that's there, right? Do you want to allow full access for these people and for these influences to your house and to your family? Do you leave your dynamite laying around in your house? Well, you wouldn't do that because you understand the potential, right? And can you effectively monitor this access, the access that these people have to you and to your loved ones? You know, or do you leave your child with a wolf in the room? And I want us to understand that with great power comes great responsibility. That we have these phones, we have this access. I see some of you are smiling, I'll get to that in a minute. But we have this access, and if we have this power without understanding the responsibility, then we don't get it. We're playing with fire, we're playing with a loaded gun, we're playing with something that's going to blow up in our face and devour us. And no, I'm not quoting Spider-Man, and I'm not quoting Stanley nor Voltaire. I'm quoting Jesus in Luke 12:48. It says, "For everyone to whom much is given, from him much will be required. And to whom much has been committed of him, they will ask the more." You see, God understands that there is great power in the things that we will figure out and things that we will do in this life. But enjoined with that and connected to it is the tremendous responsibility that comes with it. So be careful with what we hand our children. Be careful with what we allow ourselves to have access to. I know a man one time that he had a phone. First time he'd ever had the phone with internet connection, and he actually took it to one of his fellow Christians and said, "Here, you take this. I can't handle this responsibility. This is more than I can bear." Now ask yourself, do we do that? Are we willing to cut ourselves off from the internet if we would recognize that it's more than we can bear? We put this power and responsibility in 77% of our population and 93% of our young people's hands. Do we understand what we've given them? The loaded gun, the time bomb, the explosive device that we've given them. Are we and are they capable of handling it? Please be honest, because your soul and their soul depends on the truthful answer. I want to talk to you about a little case study here. It's only a case study because we're using it as such. You may know Curt Schilling. And he's a former Major League Baseball pitcher, but in late February of this year, he made a simple post on Twitter congratulating his daughter, saying something along the lines of, so proud that she's going to be accepted to such and such college as a pitcher. So, from him, it's a very prideful moment. This is awesome. I get to congratulate my daughter for kind of doing the same thing in the softball world that I began one day to do in the baseball world. But what followed was an avalanche of his Twitter followers and people that had access to his Twitter account saying rude and disgusting and suggestive sexual things that were directed towards his daughter by dozens of people. I mean, just to hear him talk about it just caught him off guard and took his breath away. It blew his mind that anybody would react that way. He never saw that type of potential out there existing. Well, Kurt researched, and he said it was surprisingly easy to find the true identities of the most offensive commenters. And from what I understand, he contacted them first. And he said, look, I know who you are. And some of those people apologized. Some of them said, look, I was out of line, and that, you know, terrible of me, I shouldn't have said that, and that kind of thing. But some didn't. So he posted their real identities on that same Twitter account. So just so you know, the people that said this, here's who they are. Here's their names. Here's where they live. And all of a sudden, these guys out there in the real world, because of their virtual actions, were now suffering real-life consequences. They had no idea. You know, who's going to know? Who's going to ever figure out who Madman 3078 is? Well, Kurt Schilling did. But it wasn't that difficult. And, you know, if a baseball player can figure it out, right? Then there's some people out there that do that all the time that can figure out who it is that said what was said. One man was fired from his job. The other was kicked out of his college because of the comments that he made in the virtual world, in that safe zone where there's a disconnect between real life and virtual life. And so we have to understand that it doesn't matter which side of this we're on, that disconnect we have is a fairy tale, and that the two are absolutely connected. What we do in the virtual world absolutely translates to the real world. The consequences on the internet are not virtual, but they are real. Galatians 6:7. It's amazing sometimes you read the scriptures and you think God is prepared for everything. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, not even by the virtual world. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. So it doesn't matter where you're sowing it, behind what closed doors you're hiding what you're doing, you will reap what you sow. God knows if nobody else ever finds out, if Kurt Schilling never tracks you down. God knows. But chances are it's going to be found out by someone and it's going to have an impact on you. And here's the scary part, that once you've sinned in the virtual world, it may never go away for the rest of your life. It may be there forever. These guys go to try to get a job, try to find a girlfriend, and somebody Googles their name. Oh, you're that guy. You're that guy that said these terrible things about an 18-year-old girl when her dad was just saying how, you know, he was proud of her. That'll likely be on the internet somewhere accessible to people for the rest of their lives. You may be forgiven of your sin by God and by the offended party, but you know, Kurt Schilling can forgive these people. But guess what? The information is still out there. That information can be on the web for as long as the web exists. And I would venture a guess that it will outlast me and it will outlast you on this earth. Once you've sinned in the virtual world, it may never go away for the rest of your life. Considering the danger. Like never before, your good name can be lost for a lifetime. Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver and gold. You know, I don't think that the proverb writer understood the comments he was making about the virtual world when he said what he said. But God certainly did. God certainly understood that mankind would come up with new and inventive ways to sully their own reputation, to destroy the good name that they should have. And so just consider that. Before you speak, before you engage online, consider how quickly it can be gone and how it can never return to you. The virtual world has all of the frivolous feel of a harmless fantasy with all of the bite of sin and death. That is a scary, scary fantasy. Ephesians 5:15-18. Advice from God, again, how timely. Appropriate when it was written, just as appropriate as it is now. Look carefully then how you walk. In other words, he says, be careful. You're walking on a tightrope. Look at what you're stepping on. Look where you're walking. But look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Understand what the will of the Lord is in your real life and in your virtual life. There is no virtual life. There is no virtual life. There may be virtual worlds. There may be virtual characters. But there is no virtual life. Understand that there is only just life. And you've only got one. This life is completely survivable. In other words, you can do what's right in this life, and you can, your soul can survive in all of eternity. You can be with God one day. This lesson is not about doomsday. It's not about the internet as the great Satan. It's about understanding the power for good and evil that's there at your fingertips. You can survive this life and be successful following God, but not if you're led astray and not if you're distracted. And the internet is a great place for both of those things to happen. It's a great place for you to be led astray and a great place for you to be distracted. Don't be led astray. Live the one life that you have to God. I hope this strikes pay dirt with you. I hope this resonates in your head. Maybe you've thought about it before. Maybe you're hearing it for the first time. But understand these things. This is the world we live in. And if we don't understand the enemy, if we don't understand who it is that's out to get us, if we don't understand how sin is coming to attack us, we're like that damaged or wounded gazelle out there where the lion is creeping up behind him just waiting to take advantage of that vulnerability. And so if you're looking at yourself and you recognize that I really have moved away from God and I need to return, then we're about to offer an invitation for you to let us know how we can help you with that. And if you're not a Christian, we're about to offer an invitation. That if you want to understand how to have a relationship with God, we can tell you that. We can sit down, we can study with you. And if you already know what you need to do, it's just a matter of doing it, we can help you do that right here this morning. So if you're subject to the invitation, please let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing.